History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. We've learned that they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to take the initiative to ask a few questions and then invest enough time to listen patiently as memories from long ago take on new meaning in the here and now. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Our guest today is a lifelong New Yorker you may have the privilege of meeting sometime in the Big Apple, especially if you visit the museum ship USS Intrepid, an aircraft carrier that survived five kamikaze attacks in World War II, later served as a NASA recovery vessel, and now is a sea, air, and space museum welcoming visitors from all over the world. 98-year-old World War II Navy veteran Arthur Grabiner will start us off with his early years.
I had three sisters and a brother. Two sisters born in Poland. The other sister, my brother and I, we were born here in the United States. I was born in Lower Manhattan, and the family moved to Brooklyn, and my father bought a grocery business. We moved to the Bronx, and that's where I grew up. And as I said, here was my home, my apartment. I went 20 blocks this way, 20 blocks that way, 20 blocks that way, 20 blocks that way. That was my world. Occasionally, my father would take me downtown, and that was a pleasure to go to the theater there. But that's it. We went to school there. Everything was there. Now, I was drafted into the Navy, and the first place, on October 26th, I think it was, I was assigned to my ship, the USS Lawrence, APA 153. We had 24 landing craft, which we used to carry the troops from our ship to the invading area.
As a boy growing up in New York in the 30s, I know, you know, the Polo Grounds and Ebbets Field and Yankee Stadium. Were you a baseball fan?
Yes. In going to high school, you joined the general organization, and they took us to a football game, either the Giant game or the Yankee game, and I had that for 4 years, and the whole school went, and that was really exciting, going to these games and seeing people from all over the city there.
Did you have a sports hero or anything in those days?
Well, everybody in my high school had one. It was Hank Greenberg. He was 15 years before me, but he lived in my neighborhood, went through the school. Whenever we go to the school, that was it. We had our hero.
And like you, Hank Greenberg also served in World War II. Baseball fans might know that the Hall of Famer had his number 5 retired by the Detroit Tigers, that he was a 2-time MVP, 2-time World Series champion. He led the American League in homers 4 times, including 3 times before World War II and once after coming back from serving more time in the military than any other big leaguer during that period. 47 months in uniform, first in the Army, then the Army Air Corps. Hank's last duty overseas was scouting bombing targets for B-29s in the China-Burma-India theater. Hank Greenberg was the first big leaguer to sign up for military service after Pearl Harbor. And speaking of Pearl Harbor, I understand you have a very distinct memory of December 7th, 1941.
I certainly do. I was at home. It was a Sunday. Country what they write. It was a nice sunny day in New York City. I was in my bedroom. I had my radio, and I was listening to the football game. the New York Giants versus the Dodgers. And what, listening to the game, all of a sudden there was an announcement, all military personnel, please report back to your base. I don't know what the heck's going on. I'm listening radio. Later on, they said a Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. If you asked me where Pearl Harbor was, I did not know it. If you showed me a map, I couldn't think. The next day in our high school, we all reported to our homeroom, and the PA system was on, and we heard the President Roosevelt ask for a declaration of war against Germany, Italy, and the Japanese. And life from that moment on changed for me, for everybody in the country. We had ration stamps, growing up buying war bonds and everything. Women went to work, and it was the surcharge at night, the test, blackouts and everything. If you saw a Western Union messenger, those days, the Western Union messenger was on a bike. He had a khaki uniform. You saw him in your neighborhood. That was bad news, because the War Department sent a telegram to the next of kin telling him your loved son, daughter, whatever, was killed. And that was terrible to see that.
And I'm curious, too, because being right here in New York City, you're close to some things that a lot of people don't think of when it comes to World War II. I mean, we think about the European theater and the Pacific, but the U-boat threat off the Atlantic coast, is that something you were aware of at the time?
We were aware. At that time, not that everybody had a radio, no televisions. What it was, there were sinking ships right off New York constantly, and they would go with a newspaper, extra, 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 and you buy a paper for 3 cents. That's how you got everything. You went to movies, there was Movie Tone News, which was came on and showed this occupation, that we were doing. Things weren't going good for us at the beginning. They would sink on our ships, but we were building, for every ship they sunk, we built two to replace them. And we were well aware of the war in New York City. Now, there was rationing. My brother had a car, couldn't get gasoline. He had to sell his car.
I want to ask also, because I know that you're one of the many Jewish American veterans who served in World War II. Were you aware, was your family aware of what was happening to the Jewish people throughout Europe because of the Third Reich?
Yes. Well, later on, we were aware that they were confiscating all the goods of the Jewish people in Germany, Italy, and we were aware of it. My grandmother came from Poland, was fleeing the Nazis, and she passed away. In the Jewish religion, you sit for a week, what they call sitting shiva. You sit on a cardboard box, and my mother, some relative came and found out that my grandmother was killed, and my mother sat for a week. There were dietary restrictions in Jewish. The Arabs, the Palestinians have the same thing. You don't meet with dairy. I get up to Sampson, New York, 7 o'clock in the morning. My first meal in the Navy was a bologna sandwich on white bread. That's meat, and the bread is made with milk, with a glass of milk. Welcome to the U.S. Navy.
Nothing kosher about it.
No, but I bent all the rules of war.
You know, before you ended up in the Navy, did you have some ideas of what you were going to do when you grew up, what your ambitions, hopes, and dreams were?
I was hoping to go to some college or something, and it was all put stored away in my brain when I went to war.
And why the Navy as opposed to one of the other branches?
Well, everybody in my neighborhood was going into the Army. A few in the Marines. I wanted to be a little different. When I went to the draft board, they asked me if I had a preference. I said, U.S. Navy. They said, great, you got it. That was our allocation for the day. If I said the Army, I would get the Navy. That's what happened. Everybody that day in station where we went for our physical got the Navy. Well, I was offered to go, and I went to yeoman school to go to submarine duty. You know, small, I could fit on submarine, a little more comfortable. I was a gung-ho, and then I thought about it. What would my parents think about it? And I aborted the idea.
Well, and we know now that that was one of the most dangerous things you could do in the Navy in World War II, and 52 submarines didn't survive the war. So was there kind of a welcome to the Navy moment for you, something that gave you a taste of what this life was going to be like?
Well, I found out that the Navy tells us what to eat, sleep, drink, dress, when to get up, when to go to sleep. Now, they put me in a barracks, about 50 of us, and an ultraviolet lamp was on 24/7. None of the other barracks had it. Here, they were testing to see how many of us went to sick bay, got sick. We couldn't do anything about it. Navy took our life over, and they told us what to do.
And did you have a preference for what kind of ship you ended up on?
No, I didn't know. I went to yeoman school for 4 months. Then they sent me to Virginia and back and forth. Then they sent me to California to the Marine base. And then finally, jumping around there for about 2 weeks, they took about 30 of us and they sent us to the ship I went on to fill the complement up.
And what was your duty aboard ship?
That time I was a yeoman striker. Then I became a yeoman third class, and then a second class yeoman. We did all the paperwork on the ship that the Navy required. But I must tell you, I stood 4-hour watch every day of the week, generally 12 at night to 4 in the morning. That's if I was on a bridge listening to the officer tell me 40 knots, 20 knots, whatever it was, and I related down to the engine room. And when we had general quarters, I was talking near a gun, a 40-millimeter gun. Later on, we had the loading up our passengers, I'll call them. They went over the side on a rope ladder into the land grip. Well, I was there. I had a big pole with a flag. And what it was, we're out a couple of miles from the beach. They go in a circle. I wave my flag, and they come, hook up, and then they go. Now, very good. They go in there. But there's one problem. They, many instances, they can't hit the beach. It's coral, rock, and everything. Well, they drop the ramp back further in the water, and all the Marines or the Army personnel at the time, they would go in hands over the head, with carrying the rifle, the water up to the belly button, the backpack with the ammunition that is kept dry. Now, they hit the beach. Even though we had a beach party to greet them, and on our ship, let me go back, we had two surgeons in sick bay, a general practitioner, a dentist, and a chaplain. They sent us 6 wounded servicemen, and our crew took care of them. Eventually, we went to Saipan, and we dropped them off. But the Japanese lulled our troops in. It was quiet. Then they get in, and they're in tunnels, and they came out, and hellfire blew open. But here, the beach, fine. They get back here in the trees and everything. That's when they engage the enemy.
What was the first battle you were involved in?
Lingayen Gulf in the Philippines. We're there for 1 day. We got rid of our troops. Now, en route to the Philippines, the head medical officer called me, and he wanted to speak to me. I go in, what's the situation? Of the 550 crew members, I'm the only one that had AB blood, which is a rare type of blood. And he suggested that I give a pint of blood and they would keep it in reserve for me. I said, fine, maybe. So let's go. That blood stood in the refrigerator till the ship was decommissioned. I was thankful, lucky I didn't have to use it. Navy life was good to me. I enjoyed it.
And we are enjoying this visit with 98-year-old Arthur Grabiner, a lifelong New Yorker who makes his home in North Flushing, Queens. You can find photos and video related to Mr. Grabiner and his story at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Not only does he volunteer his time aboard the USS Intrepid Air, Sea, and Space Museum, he's also a frequent visitor to St. John's University athletic events and Veterans Day ceremonies there. He's been a guest of honor at the Army-Navy football game. He'll be honored at the New York Islanders game on Thursday, February 8th, and at a recent Big Apple event featuring one of the greatest athletes on the planet, Mr. Grabiner received perhaps the loudest ovation of the night. We'll explain when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.